He subverted the echoes from the nearby old courthouse steps where, yes, once slaves were sold. Rivers are revelations. Beyond metaphor, our planet is organized and fed by the circulation of water. From mountaintop to abyssal plain, through an intricate interlocking architecture that by movement, absorption, irrigation, and sustenance maintains our body and our body politic. I return again to the vision of hydraulic society, community worldwide, sustained and secured by an adequacy of water. We can no longer deny the depletion of water worldwide. The European rivers run dry, the California fields are brown, the forests are on fire. Record temperatures and evaporation continue to disrupt agriculture and public health. The town next door to where I live, on the ocean, must now import water by tanker truck for public service and sanitation. It is not a distant, ignorable problem any longer. We must reinvent canals and waterways. We must hydrate our communities and our bodies. We must put aside all the foolish pride, the political absurdities, the social conflict, the prideful war, to focus on what brings us together and sustains us. Strip away everything else, distill it all down to water, and allow its flow in natural conduits, melting ice, lakes and rivers, built canals, waterways and pipes, penultimately into the ocean, where it turns round again, mixes to sustain our travel fantasies and hopeful dreams. We will discuss these issues and more in future editions of World Ocean Radio.
World Ocean Radio is distributed by the Public Radio Exchange and the Pacifica Network for use by college and community radio stations worldwide. Find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts and at worldoceanobservatory.org.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Our goal is to create an atmosphere devoid of genre, a place where quality is key. It's important for the world and future generations to understand the power of art and music. Ultimately, we are doing our part to carry on tradition. Tune into Passing Sound, the first Saturday of each month at 10 p.m. on KBOO Community Radio 90.7 FM, or KBOO.FM, where we make musical structures for the listeners.
Welcome to another episode of Civic Cypher. I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. It's very important that people know that. I don't know if we say that enough, that you are Ramses Ja.
Indeed, I am.
When we out in the public, people say it. It's very exciting. I am Q Ward.
Yes.
This is Civic Cypher.
That's important. And it's a crazy time in the country right now, and we got to talk to you. So that's what we're here to do. Stick around, because today we are going to be sharing some stories about police and making the point that it's not black or white, but rather making the point that it is blue. And this is something that a lot of people are not connecting, especially people that are far removed from the goings on the streets, the goings on with respect to activism, the goings on with respect to invisible social societal forces that keep us divided and keep us from understanding the true reality of what it's like to be in the other's shoes. So we're going to spend a good part of the show talking about that, and again, sharing some personal stories. We're also going to be talking about, for our Way Black History Fact, we're going to be discussing the largest bank robbery in the history of the United States of America, just to give you a brief view of what that looks like. It's basically a bunch of people stealing from black banks. And then we're also going to give you some game on how you can support, you know, the NAACP's efforts to, you know, create some real police reform in light of all the goings on with Tyre Nichols and the aftermath of that. So a lot to stick around for. But first and foremost, I think it's time for some Ebony Excellence. How do you feel about that, Q?
Shall we?
We shall. So this week's Ebony Excellence is sponsored by Hip Hop Weekly Media, and the content comes from Black Enterprise. We're going to shout out Jennifer Ford this week. I'm not a big shoe person, but Q is. I remember one time you introduced me to a guy. I believe his name was Alexander in Georgia.
Yes, Alexander John.
Yes, and he's a big shoe guy too. Yes. And then you took me to Complex Con, and there's a lot of shoe guys out there. Anyway, Jennifer Ford is a shoe person, woman. She's a Houston native and the owner of a sneaker store called Premium Goods. And she's confirmed a new collaboration with longtime supporter Nike on a new Air Force One. According to Vogue, the design was created by Ford, who was inspired by items in her own closet. The sneaker's design features quilted sides and a beaded iteration of the signature Nike swoosh. Quote, "There's this artistic part of me that I never get the time to use or develop," unquote. Ford said, recalling her desire to craft such a project. She goes on, "I knew I was fully capable, but now seeing the creation I made, I know I can do it. It's every sneaker owner's dream." The collection features two sets of black and beige Air Force Ones that Ford named after her daughters, Sophia and her niece, Bella. The sneakers are complemented with laces and are held by a metal rose, which Ford used to present a generational family name. The collaboration highlights the accents on the shoes as a love letter to the black woman who continue to inspire Ford's success with her craft. She's quoted saying, "For me, it's important because if I'm the only one, people have to see me," Ford said. And reportedly, Ford became the first and only black woman founder of a sneaker retail store in the country when she opened Premium Goods. So once again, shout out to Jennifer Ford. You indeed are Ebony Excellence. Now, if you are a longtime listener of this show, Civic Cypher, you know that we came out the blocks with a story that was, in hindsight, it's almost the perfect story to tell as our first story together on this show in this space. This is a story that we're going to tell again today. The story helps us make the point that we will be making throughout the show, that it is not a black and white thing. Often enough, it's black people versus white supremacy, sure. But as we've established to the nth degree in recent episodes, white supremacy is not necessarily white people, right? It's white supremacy, or white supremacist institutions are those institutions that overwhelmingly benefit white people but aren't necessarily upheld by white people. They can be upheld by anyone. Now, as you may or may not know, depending on when you've jumped on to the Civic Cypher train and subscribed to the Cyph Life with me and Q here.
I like that, the Cyph Life.
Yeah, man, all about
that on the shirt somewhere.
You know that this show exists to foster conversations, dialogue, to bring things to, you know, your attention. And we're doing our best to exist in spaces where we're most likely to find allies, people who want this sort of content but may not go and seek it out. This is the origin story of this show. For those that don't know and are unfamiliar, we used to work at a radio station. One radio station. It's crazy now that we're on all over the whole country. But we did work at one radio station, and we had, I think, two or three shows together over the years, something like that, right? So when 2020 rolled around, we got active, as you do, and we got outside. We started protesting, holding up signs, taking our kids, you know, making an event of it, you know, affirming that our Black lives mattered.
How dare you affirm that your life matters, young man?
Well, listen, man, I could do nothing less because I got two sons to raise. I'm sure you echo that sentiment. Q was just being sarcastic for those that couldn't see his face here. Anyway, so that there was a time when we were trying to get the leadership that we were following on the streets. These are actual people who have studied this. They know how to organize. They know how to protest. These are community leaders. These are aspiring politicians. These are those types of folks. And what we saw in our city in Phoenix, we saw Black women out there. So shout out to Keisha, shout out to Zara, shout out to all the women from BLM Phoenix Metro and from Poder in Action and from White Paws and all the orgs that were out making it happen. But often enough, we saw Black women out there, powerful speakers, incredibly intelligent, insightful, knowledgeable, and they had bullhorns. They did not have radio stations. And that's where we had to do something about it, because indeed Q and I had access to a radio station at the time. And so we approached the leadership at the radio station, really the program director and the owner and the general manager, and said to them, hey, we should probably get some of these folks up on the radio so that they can explain what it is that they believe will help us, you know, get past this moment, this George Floyd moment, this Breonna Taylor moment. And we should do that, because doing a black square on Instagram as a hip hop station feels performative, and it doesn't feel like as much as we could do if we really care about these people. So they said, yes, let's do it. And then they started dragging their feet. And it was in that space that this story that we're about to tell happened. So I needed to kind of paint that picture for you so you recognize the climate of the country in the moment that this story takes place. Just to conclude that story, because I just need to give you background. We came back, they told us no, we resigned, and then we started Civic Cypher with some other radio stations and then grew it up to now you're listening to us. And again, on across the country. But in the in-between time when they said, yes, that's a good idea, we should definitely do it, well, they were lying to us. Q had to go to, where was it?
Florida.
Not Fort Lauderdale, though, was it?
Tampa,
Florida, to buy a new car for his woman. And he asked for me to join him on the trip and we could drive back across the country, visit some states we had never been to. You'd been there, but I hadn't. And I agreed. I thought that'd be a good time. Again, there's a pandemic. Nothing's happening. Nothing's really moving. And of course, there's a lot of tension in the air politically. And remember, Civic Cypher doesn't exist. We're still at this time only DJs, we're only hip hop radio personalities. We're not in this space, right? So we're still the version of ourselves that we thought we were going to be in perpetuity. So we jump on the flight, go to Florida, pick up this new car, really nice car. It was a Porsche. So just to give you an idea of the type of vehicle we're driving back. We went from Florida without incident to Georgia, stayed the night in Georgia, left Georgia without incident, and went to Alabama. And I remember in Alabama, we had to get gas, and that was not so fun.
Florida, Georgia, then Alabama?
Yep. That's right. I remember this. And then leaving Alabama, we, hit Mississippi next. And again, largely without incident, as you can imagine, we're looking around on this drive and there's Confederate flags and there's still Trump flags up. And Alabama was an interesting place, because for those who have not spent time driving through Alabama, a lot of the feelings of the people with respect to race and race relations and some of those, you know, country roads and indeed even the highways and interstates, the feelings of the people are not hidden. They're out in full display on billboards, and they talk about it on radio. Right out there. And so being in a place like that, now mind you, George Floyd had already been murdered. This show had not started. So this is the in-between. And we're still normal people at that point. Not, well, we're still normal now
today,
but we weren't doing this show at that point. So that part of our psyche had not yet been activated. Driving through Alabama got us to be tense. We were nervous, but we were laughing, kind of making fun. You know, you hear the rumors about Alabama, you realize it's true. You're like, oh, wow, how funny. But, you know, you feel safe. You're in a car, you're driving through. You're like, listen, man, we just had to get some gas. We're just going to keep it pushing. We'll make it to New Orleans and stay the night there. And, you know, New Orleans felt a little safer than, you know, Mississippi at night. So that was kind of our plan. So again, blazed through Alabama, got to Mississippi. Now the sun's going down and we're mobbing Outkast on loud, you know, three stacks just going in. And we're on the outskirts of Mississippi, about to cross over into Louisiana, the state line. So we're still legally within the bounds of Mississippi. And I'm going to let Q jump in and start the story.
The first part of this picture that I have to paint, mm-hmm. I don't know if we always say it, but I think it's really important.
Mm-hmm.
Ram just talked about our mood on this trip. It was mixed because we were very, very aware of the temperature at the country at the time, mm-hmm. right? This is the height of not just in the wake of the murder of George Floyd, but this is the height of Trumpism,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that side of the road, they're waving 20-foot Trump flags from their houses. They're wrapping their cars in vinyl wrap of Trump with a six pack and muscles. Like, it was a really strange place to look around and realize we were actually living in. And for Ramses, a lot of things were happening. One, he's about to help his best friend drive across country. There's part of that's just exciting. Drive across country with one of your friends, especially somebody you're really close with, that you've already traveled with before, that you already know you love, that you already know you're going to have fun with, and it's actually fun.
Mm-hmm.
You're on your own schedule. You don't have a deadline. We'll get there when we get there. We stop when we want to stop. We eat when we want to eat. And we talked a lot. However, Ramses and I are DJs, so there was a lot of amazing music to listen to.
Yeah, man.
And we were in the soul of the South.
Mm-hmm.
Bumping that cast.
Outkast, I remember that.
Bumping that cast, though.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a moment where we're very, very aware that we're in the South, and everything in the South is reminding us that it's the South. Like Ram just said, Confederate flags, extreme right-wing rhetoric on the regular radio. Like, we didn't have to dive into, like, the deep web. Like, nope, whatever the regular radio station is in that city,
they're talking out loud.
Out loud about all that. And
disrespectful with it.
And it was dark.
Yeah.
And it was unusually dark.
Well, we're on the state line.
No street lights, no highway lights,
nothing,
no signs. And because of the trees, no moonlight.
Yeah, I remember.
It was pitch black, dark outside. So as far as the headlights on this car could shine,
that
was all you could see. Now, in Arizona and in most cities that I've lived in the event that drivers doze off or cross over onto the either the median or the burn, the side of the road,
yeah, the gore lane,
there is a thing they do to the pavement,
mm-hmm.
where there's grooves so that when your tires run over them, it makes a noise and alerts you, hey, you should get back on the road or get back in your lane.
Or wake up.
Yeah. Or wake up.
Yeah.
In Mississippi, those things are not on the side of the road. They're in the middle.
Yeah. So let me say it right. So in Arizona, where we are accustomed to driving, there is a white strip of paint that defines the lane.
Mm-hmm.
just outside of that white strip of paint, maybe 6 inches to the outside of that, there is that rumble strip that's indented into the pavement that makes the noise if your tire hits it. So if your tire runs over the white line, doesn't make a noise. It's not until you get outside of that white line that the noise begins. In Mississippi, the white line itself has the rumble strip in it.
Yes.
All right, go ahead.
So while we're listening to, I think, Skewed on the Barbie, mm-hmm. is probably where we were about that time. Changing lanes, or maybe not, just driving,
yeah.
our tires come into contact with that rumble strip for approximately 1 full second. So just long enough for you to hear the noise. And then there was really no correction to make. I didn't have to swerve. I didn't have to turn. I didn't have to get over. Just the car will kind of just guide itself back into the center of the lane because I'm driving yeah. uninebriated and not sleepy. We were fine.
Real quick, Q has never been inebriated in his life. He's drank alcohol and never done a drug. You know who else has never done that?
Ramses Ja.
I've never drank alcohol in my life and I've never done a drug.
Right. So we didn't even have to worry about either of those things. And the other benefit to driving across country with your best friend is that you don't even have to pretend that you're not sleepy. You can either pull over and go to sleep or, hey, dog, you trying to get some of this?
Yep, jump right in.
And then just, you know, so we're en route to New Orleans where we plan to stop and sleep. And we think nothing of the...
That was it, too. That was
we think nothing of that because... That should not mean anything.
Yeah.
Except, I guess in Mississippi, it means a lot, whole lot. Because.
Who let the dogs out? That'll make sense in a minute.
Because the very, very unpleasant sight and feeling of police lights and sirens are now behind us. Now, I always think that's for someone else. Every time it ever happens, I'm trying to get out their way because there's no way that they're here for me.
We're not speeding. We doing all right. We good.
So let me get over out these people's way so they can, oh, they're getting over with me. This is for us.
Shoot. That feeling.
We're in Mississippi.
In the dark.
In the pitch black. At somewhere between 2 and 3 a.m. Eastern or Central, whatever time zone we were in Mississippi, summer 2020.
Yeah, I think Mississippi, we're still Eastern.
You talking about the worst possible time to be getting pulled over in the deep South in this country in the middle of the night? That was probably it.
Yeah, real quick. We're laughing about this now. When this happened, this was terrifying. And it's important that
we were laughing as I'm starting to describe the specifics. It's getting real unfunny again.
Exactly. And that's something that you need to understand. Okay. So, you know, many of you listen to our show every week. You understand that we're reasonable men. Now you know that we have never done a drug. None of that stuff. No, that's not even who we are. We have nothing to fear, right? Except,
yeah, we do. We have everything to fear.
Talk to him.
Unfortunately,
go ahead.
Right, so we pull over.
Mm-hmm.
There's two vehicles. I don't know if it was both SUVs, maybe a cruiser and an SUV, but two vehicles. One's a highway patrol officer. The other is a sheriff. They were both necessary for pulling us over on this night. And the big spotlights on both sides of the car are on. There are officers approaching the driver's side at this point.
Q's driving. I'm in the passenger seat.
I rolled my window down. Our seatbelts are fastened. My hands are on the steering wheel. I am assuming the least threatening posture that I can. And as is the case in most of these interactions, sincerely wondering why we've been pulled over. The officer points out that he heard the noise that tires make when they come into contact with those grooves in the road. Asked if we were okay, if we'd been drinking, if we were tired, whatever the case. we're fine. No, we haven't been drinking.
Clearly, we haven't been drinking.
You know,
we're not even sleepy.
At that point, after you answer no, the only posture you can assume is that it? You're not saying we were speeding because we weren't. You now know that we're okay. We're not tired. We haven't been drinking.
Yeah, everything's cool.
Except the next thing he says is, can you step out of the car?
That changes things.
That's the next thing he said. He didn't ask any more questions. He didn't do any more deductive reasoning, no more research. Can you step out of the car? Now, I'm not obligated to step out of the car. Except when you look like
black us, as you are, you better get
the decision that you have to make is not even, I better do this.
Yeah.
But you have two positions that you can assume. One is, I'm going to make myself enemy of this officer by flexing my knowledge of the law, expressing that he doesn't have a warrant or just cause, and there's no reason that I need to get out of this vehicle. Assuming an adversarial position to a state trooper in the dark in Mississippi, summer 2020. The last thing I want to do is become this person's enemy. On principle, I can hold ground and stay in the car, but I know I've done nothing wrong. I don't have any weapons, drugs, nothing on me. So I'm just trying to not agitate this officer. Now, picture these bright spotlights and the voice of a state trooper
from Mississippi. With that Mississippi accent.
It sounds exactly like what you're imagining it sounds like. But once I step out of the car, I turn around and see the officer is black. This means something completely different today to me than it did that day. However, to Ramses, it felt exactly how it feels today to most of you who have now learned about the officers involved with Brother Tyree Nichols.
Now, bear in mind that Q's just stepped out of the car. I'm freaking out because why would they ask him to get out of the car? I've seen this movie. I literally, with these eyes, have seen it in person in Compton, California, when I was little. And I don't know what the officer looks like, so I'm still in the car. All right. Now, we got to take a pause for the cause. We're going to come back with a little bit more of this story because we have a point to make. So stay by your radios and we'll be right back at you in just a sec.
And now, proper propaganda. Watch it. Pull my mic back. You like that? Journalists with journalists too. We can strike back. Hardcore reporters with orders from headquarters. Behind enemy lines, sidestepping the borders.
For those of you just tuning in to Civic Cypher, I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. I am Q Ward. You are now and again tuned in to Civic Cypher.
Ain't that the truth? All right, so stick around. We got a little bit more story to tell you. Again, it's not black and it's not white. It's not black or white. It's not black versus white. It's blue. Okay? It's a lot more than blue, but we're going to start with the blue to help y'all to see what reality looks like, and then we're going to slowly work from there to explain all these other less visible forces that don't get recorded. But today we're talking about how it's not black or white, it's blue. We're also going to spend some time talking about an enormous bank robbery where the largest in the country, it came from black people by white-owned banks, and it was very sad. But right about now, we are going to teach you how to be a BA that has become a better ally, Baba. So today's Baba sponsored by Major Threads for the finest in menswear. Check out majorthreads.com. And if you would like to become a better ally, we're inviting you to check out the NAACP. That's at naacp.org. I got a note from them. It says, last week, the world watched with horror as the city of Memphis released the footage from the heinous police brutality that killed Tyree Nichols. The police officers involved have been charged, but that is far from enough. We have run out of thoughts and prayers. Thoughts and prayers do not change the lack of regard for black lives. 10,000 urgent signatures are needed. Add your name now to urge Congress to pass critical police reform legislation to end police brutality. Ending the inhumane and unjustified trauma of police violence against Black Americans is going to take more than what we've seen from people in power today. There's not a single federal law on the books addressing police violence. We are making sure Congress knows that failing to act now means writing another obituary. We need real legislative action now so no one experiences this kind of horrific violence at the hands of law enforcement ever again. Okay, that's from the NAACP. Again, NAACP.org. They do have a fund where you can donate for this as well. And this is important. You know, we're not all going to agree on what the best thing to do is, but the NAACP is doing something. And if you're doing nothing right now, then you can at least help some organization do something, because what we're seeing right now, it's hurtful and it's awful and it's clearly not working. And so now's not the time to play the politics game. We need to move the needle in a lot of arenas, this being, you know, one of the ones that we have to talk about, because it's important in this arena for us. So check out the NAACP. All right, now back to our story. So Q has stepped out of the car, and I'm still in the car. Now, I know full well, I'm not new to this. I don't want you to think that I got active in 2020 and then read a couple of books and then I was like on my level, on my square. No, I've been this person. For those that are not familiar, Q's mom and my dad are both preachers. And in the Black community, more often than not, the preachers are the ones who, obviously they're your spiritual advisors and so forth, but they're also kind of like community leaders, mm-hmm. right? So us being children of ministers meant that we also had a dose of take care of your community, protect your community. So for me, since a young age, I always knew that that was going to be a part of my existence forevermore. I was born into a group that is considered disadvantaged by every meaningful metric in this country. Mm-hmm. And it is my job to know that and work against that, right? And so I've read books my whole life. You know, my study, you know, for those that watch the show or listen to the show and are familiar with Dr. Westenberg, I met Dr. Westenberg when I was 19. She was my teacher. So for the past 21 years, she has been influencing me and providing me with deeper insight. I was the president of the Black Student Union when I was in college. She was the advisor. So this gives you a little bit of an idea. So when we're pulled over in Mississippi and they ask Q to get out of the car, again, very clearly, we're not drunk. And he asks Q to step back. And remember, I can't see out that window, so I don't know what's happening with Q.
Not only is there a bright spotlight, but I've now stepped out of view.
Out of view, fully. So he didn't say, hey, I want to give you sobriety test. He didn't say any of that. He said, hey, just step back here. And you listen to Q talk. He talks like that all the time. Drunk people sound different. They look different. They move different. Or people on drugs or whatever. This is my understanding. Obviously, don't have any firsthand knowledge of that.
We've seen it.
Yeah, we're DJs. We're in clubs all the time. Different. Yeah. So once that happened, I'm like, uh-oh, now it's a problem. Now, you may say something different, but I just know that this is the way those stories tend to go. Everyone is talking about Tyree Nichols and how much of a skater he was and how cool he was and how he was such a kind person or whatever. That's not the first time that happened. Yeah, people may have been able to find out, oh, 7 years ago, George Floyd did this. And oh, yeah, that one guy, he did this a long time ago. And oh, yeah, he smoked joint in high school, whatever, you know, and to try to make these people all look like criminals. They darken their photographs when they put their pictures up on the news and that sort of stuff to try to make them look more sinister. And they couldn't do that with Tyree. But we know that that's just the media trying to reach, and really police trying to reach, to try to, you know, acutely as a more articulate way of describing it, but effectually what he says is that they're trying to erode some of the sympathy from the popular consensus view, vantage point. So again, we didn't have to be perfect in order to get hemmed up on some silly stuff, or, you know, beat up or even killed on the side of the road, right? So I'm in full panic mode. All the alarm bells are going off because there's no reason for them to take you out of the car where I can't see him. So what do I do? Because I know what's coming next. They are about to come to this car and they are going to take me out of the car too. I wasn't even driving the car. Now, first off, it's not my way to abandon nobody. If you're going down, I'm going down with you. I'm just made that way. So if that ever happens,
especially if your name is Q.
Yep. But I didn't even do anything. And I know that they're coming back to get me. Right. I wasn't driving the car. Nothing. Right. So what do I do? I'm like, okay, the only thing I have is my phone. But we've been bumping Outkast the whole time and we don't have chargers for this car. Maybe Q was plugged up and I wasn't, you know, I was thinking we can charge when we get to the hotel.
We ended up buying a charger. We didn't have one.
So there you go. Yeah. So I'm like, let me turn on my phone and record this. The problem is, again, I'm not new to this. I'm true to this. I don't record it because if something happens, I can't get that footage out. They can go on my phone and delete it. We've seen police officers do that too. So I go on Facebook Live. Now remember, I told you the backstory. It's 2020. People is in the streets active. People knows I petitioned.
People outside.
Yes.
Mad.
And everybody's at home looking at Facebook because ain't nobody at work, right? It was a little later in the day for people back home. Of course, we were on the East Coast at that time.
The benefit, though, is that people were still awake where we were from.
Yeah. It's
2 a.m. on the East Coast, it's 11 o'clock at night. And yeah, a lot of people that we know
on their phone,
DJs, people that work in nightlife, people that don't have traditional 9-to-5s, they up.
Yep. So I go on Facebook Live because y'all about to see whatever's about to happen. Okay. So I turn on my Facebook Live and that's it. I just put my phone in the dashboard, kind of wedged it in there to where it's upright. The phone is on me and sort of looking back. The problem is that those police lights are so bright. And I maybe, you know, oh, it's for the police officer's protection. Maybe, you know, but one of the things that I don't love, like I do want police to be protected, of course. They're human beings. They're endowed with consciousness from our common creator. And therefore I want them to be protected. But I also want our lives to be prioritized too. Right. And so people are, well, it's for the officer's protection. Like somehow their life is more valuable. You know what I mean?
The life of the men who are carrying guns more valuable than those of us who are just driving our cars.
And I disagree with that. You're not wrong, but that's something that I fundamentally disagree with. I think that a life is a life, you know, a human life, especially. I recognize that we eat animals and step on bugs and that sort of thing. I don't step on bugs, but, you know, anyway, so now my Facebook is picking up and people are jumping in because they can see sirens.
Yeah, imagine the first thing you see when you, oh, Rams is live. Oh,
yeah.
You jump on and you see spotlight and sirens.
Yeah. So after.
Or red and blue lights, right?
Yeah, yeah. Red and blue lights, right? So after a minute or so, now, I'm not talking to the camera. I'm trying to hide it so that the officer doesn't, you know, whatever. So the officer comes back and he's talking to me with that thick accent. He's standing behind the pillar in the car. So, you know, a window. I'm in the passenger seat. So on my right side, there's a pillar just behind my head that's almost kind of parallel with the seat.
Mm-hmm.
So he's standing behind that pillar speaking to me. But I can't see him. So again, I don't know what he looks like, none of that. And I hear that Mississippi accent. I'm like, oh man, this is bad. But the thing is that people on Facebook are here too. So now people are like, where is Ramses? Where, you know? And someone had put in the the comments, because you can interact with the live feed that Ramses is in Mississippi, right? So just like I thought, the officer asks for my ID, and I wasn't being combative at all, but I'm like, I'm just curious, what is it about me that makes you want or need my ID, just so that I know what we're dealing with here? And he's like, you know, whatever he said, standard procedure, was just made some, so I just want to know, make sure, whatever he's on. But I don't have a problem. Here's my ID, take it, you know. Now my ID is, I can say it on the radio, my ID is beat up. I haven't had that ID since I had an ID and it is old. And the only club I have to go to, I own it. And any other clubs that I have to go to, the people know me. I don't go out unless I'm invited, and usually they're paying me. So ID is never important. And then, so anyway, I got this beat up ID, takes it. He looks at it, takes down the information, gives it back to me, makes a comment about the ID or whatever, but that's that. So I'm thinking, okay, we're cool. And then he says, I need you to step out of the car. And I'm like, oh man. And I knew it was coming. So now I'm like, okay, let me jump out the car. And I asked him, I was like, so what is it about me that I need to get out of the car? He's like, man, listen, just get out of the car, walk back to my, to the car with me, to my police car. And again, like you said, I don't want to argue with this man. So I jump out of the car. Right then, my phone dies. So everybody watching on Facebook, the screen just goes black. And the live feed has ended. The live session has ended. So now everybody at home.
The last thing they heard was this officer asking Ramses to get out of the car. Where Q is, what's happening with Q, they don't know yet, because Ramses wasn't able to like narrate.
I couldn't figure it out. I couldn't see it.
So before, I have to kind of rewind, because to tell both stories, you kind of have to jump back and forth a little bit, because our stories at some point become the same. But during this part of it, there are two very, very different stories happening. I step out of the car and I turn around and I see that this state trooper is black, and my heart rate slows down. So this is the interesting part. My heart rate didn't slow down because I was going to be okay. My heart rate slowed down because I felt like I wasn't about to be killed.
Yeah, at least that.
And what a notion that I felt that way today. What a notion.
Yeah, because now right? You see.
Because in Mississippi at 3:00 in the morning, if these white state troopers and white highway patrol officers pull us out of this car,
it's Porsche.
This could go really, really bad. And somehow, to me, seeing that this first officer was black, because I haven't seen the second officer yet, made me feel like I wouldn't die that night. Which means every moment prior to that, I felt like I might. And that is a crippling level of fear, because you can't logic your way out of it. I already know I haven't done anything that would lead to me being asked to get out of my car. I already know that it does not require me to be non-compliant or aggressive or violent or a criminal for them to escalate this to something awful.
I know that if you didn't look like you and you look like, pick a person who's not black, that it wouldn't have happened.
Well, more specifically, pick someone that is white.
Yeah, that's what I'm going for. I know you don't like when I do that, but 65-year-old white, no, corporate executive,
just white. Ramses thinks all those other factors matter.
It helps you to visualize.
If I was Justin Bieber, not even him, but looked like him, it'd be the same. I wouldn't have to be 65 and corporate. I wouldn't have to have a suit on, right, and be old.
The 23-year-old blonde
hair, white would help. Yeah,
I get it.
And the reason I know this is because you guys have no such video of someone that doesn't look like me being beat to death by police officers for no reason. It doesn't exist. Because trust me, the system that runs the country that we live in
would have made sure that we saw it by now, over and over again, to prove that they're not as racist as we say they are. I go to the back of the car and I start two different conversations. One of them with a Mississippi State Trooper. The other one with a black man that just so happens to either be a sheriff or a highway patrol officer. Two very, very distinctly different interactions.
Mm-hmm.
The black man that walks, that works as a member of the law enforcement community has a very human being conversation with me.
Mm-hmm.
How you doing, brother? Where you from?
He's a vacation.
Where you guys headed? Oh, you guys came all the way from out there. What do you do? Oh, you do that. I know somebody that does that.
Yeah, real quick.
It's a really human being conversation, which again makes my heart rate slow down a little bit more. Except officer, other guy, is going to make sure this feels like an interaction with law enforcement in Mississippi at 3 o'clock in the morning, and you're black.
Yep. And he was black. It was the wildest thing.
Now Ramses gets out of the car.
So I'm walking back to the sound of his voice. My phone is off. So I'm like, dang, nobody's even seeing this. So now my heart is hitting hard. And everything that man tells me to do, I'm doing it exactly the way that he says to do it.
Robot-like.
Yep. I need you to stand right here, right here. This is where I'm standing.
And I'm standing behind Ramses, behind the car, watching this interaction happen.
I didn't turn my head. I didn't turn my nothing. No sudden movements. No movements, period. Like, if this is the direction I'm facing and y'all over there having a conversation, then I'm going to just stay. You didn't tell me I could look that way. Right? So here's where it gets interesting. So far, you're like, okay, two black guys pulled over in Mississippi driving a nice car. Officers wanted to pull him out, just talk to him a little bit, whatever. The system judges us unfairly. The system causes these people to take on prejudices against their own people. The system causes people to associate traits and characteristics with blackness that aren't necessarily there. It's something that's very important to say. You know, there's this statistic that, you know, is shared on right-wing commentators and sites and, you know, places around the internet. Black people commit the majority of the crimes, right? And they have the data to back it up or whatever, right? And that information is flawed in that black people get arrested more frequently for crimes, criminal activity. And if you want to dig deeper, black communities are over-policed.
Very intentionally.
And so then you start to see why data could look that way. But it starts with interactions like this one. So what happens next? Well, as awkward as I am, and I'm standing there, we're out there for hours with these people. They start shaking us down. Hey, so what are you guys doing? What are you guys, you know?
He starts shaking us
him,
down.
Him, the one officer, right?
Officer such and such.
Black as he was shaking us down, right? What are you guys doing? Blah, blah, blah. This thing was, you know, Q's answering all the questions. I don't have nothing to say.
Go all the way to Florida to get a car?
Because it's a nice car and we got a good price.
Very, very specific car that she wanted that I went to get.
Yeah. Anyway, so then you guys got any drugs in the car? Well, he already answered that. No, I've never done a drug. He's never done a drug. We don't sell drugs. We're radio people. We're DJ. That's not what we do. All right. Well,
do you mind if I search the car?
Absolutely. Please search the car. It's brand new.
Actually, of course we do. Right? Because you're supposed to have a warrant for that. However,
we don't want no
it's
fun.
Mississippi and it's 3 o'clock in the morning
and
it's
dark,
pitch black and we're terrified.
Run
so,
it.
Sir, anything that you could do that would mean we can get back in the car and leave here alive, that'd be tight.
Run it.
So go for it.
So watch this. Now, he searches the car. Nothing comes up.
Of course, nothing came up. The car is new and it's us.
So we're like, okay, cool. We can get up out of here. No, so I'm going to go ahead and get the dog out here to smell the car. So now we got to wait for the dog.
They get the drug sniffing dog.
Right. So they walk
the canine unit.
They walk the dog around the car. Okay. Brand new car. Put the dog back and then comes
Did
back.
Did you tell them how them. Brand new? We left the dealership.
The
car drove to where we are.
Yeah, that's it. The dog gets put back away. And then the same cop, super cop, comes back and is like, yeah, well, the dog indicated the presence of drugs in the car. So we're going to have to do another search of the car. Right. So he goes back around, of course, finds nothing. Then gives us the lamest excuse I've ever heard. He said that somebody may have had a joint in their pocket and put maybe brushed up against the side of the car when we stopped to get gas in Alabama, and the dog could smell the person bumping up against the side of the car despite us driving for hours.
The dogs
and the wind blowing
what smelling sensories than us or something like that.
So there's no version of the conversation that we're having about the Tyre Nichols situation or really any of this stuff that means more to us than our own lived experience. We do recognize that the policing as an institution is biased against us. It presupposes and it assumes and it prejudges people like us. And if you get the wrong one on the wrong night and do everything right, cost you your life.
You can still
if you do everything right, life. If you do the, if you have a mental health, anything like this, we're playing a life and death game, and it feels like it's only us, and we were born to lose. And so, I say once again, it is not a black and white issue; it is a blue issue. Moving on, it's time for the Way Black History Fact. Today's Way Black History Fact is sponsored by the Black Information Network Daily Podcast. And today we are going to talk about money. Money, wealth, indeed, shapes outcomes with respect to pretty much everything. Politics, certainly with the criminal justice system.
Not even pretty much everything, bro. You can just flat out say it.
Yeah, healthcare. Everything. Yeah, everything.
Money. In this country specifically.
Yeah. So, I came across a story for our Way Black History Fact that I thought was pertinent, that helps folks to know that we weren't born to just be poor. We weren't just born to get beat up by the police or commit crimes or whatever. We have done our best at several points in history to come together, to build our community, to pool our resources, to invest in ourselves. Once upon a time, we could not depend on the government because we still can't, but you know what I'm trying to say.
Once upon a time.
You know what I mean? Thanks for that look, by the way. But once upon a time, that was not even a question. We had to do it ourselves, and we did. And this is part of what I want to share today. So I will read. Booker T. Washington, the founder of the Tuskegee Institute, and the son of slaves, once wrote, "By habits of thrift and economy, we are coming up. The American dream is deeply rooted in the belief that thrifting and saving are the necessary means to an end that is comprised of prosperity and abundance. This belief, coupled with the banking needs of formerly enslaved black soldiers, spurred the incorporation of the Freedmen's Savings and Trust Company in 1865. Quote, "This bank is just what the freedmen need," unquote, proclaimed Abraham Lincoln on March 3rd, 1865, as he signed the Freedmen's Bank Act and authorized the organization of a national bank for ex-slaves. Due in part to aggressive recruiting tactics, the number of ex-slave depositors grew rapidly from 1865 to 1870. 34 branches were established in cities across the nation, including Atlanta, Charleston, Philadelphia, and Washington, D.C. Quote, go in any forenoon and the office is found full of Negroes depositing little sums of money, drawing little sums, or remitting to a distant part of the country where they have relatives to support or debts to discharge. Unquote. This is reported in the Charleston Journal in 1867. All right. And yet thrifting and saving did not yield desired results. The dream of prosperity and abundance slowly spiraled into a nightmare of fraud, mismanagement, and discriminatory lending. In 1871, Congress authorized banks to provide business loans and mortgages. Paradoxically, such mortgages and loans were usually administered to whites at the expense of black depositors.
Of course.
Risky investments and lending patterns, coupled with cronyism and corruption at the level of upper management, slowly undermined the stability of the bank. According to Black Past, quote, and by 1874, massive fraud among upper management and among the board of directors, mind you, these are white folks, or at least mostly, I know that part because I actually did read that part in a different article. This, by the way, comes from Black Enterprise. Board of directors had taken its toll on the bank. Moreover, economic instability brought upon by the panic of 1873, coupled with the bank's rapid expansion, proved disastrous, unquote. The Freedman Bank was officially closed in June 29, 1874. At the point of closing, 61,144 black depositors were robbed of the modern equivalent of $66 million. The failure of the bank left many black depositors and borrowers distrustful of the white banking community, especially since the Freedman Bank was established and managed by white men. So in short, so far, white people were managing the bank where the earnings of ex-slaves were being deposited. They used that money to make more risky loans on the bank. Go ahead. What do you talk to me, man? What's up?
I don't know that a greater human trait or characteristic exist than the love, trust, empathy, and perpetual forgiveness of black people to America.
Yeah.
White men established and ran a bank for freed black people and stole their money from them.
Yeah. Well, it goes on. I'll read this. In subsequent years, the white banking community has imposed higher interest rates on black borrowers or simply rejected their applications for mortgages and small business loans. Although black depositors should be far less concerned about being overtly robbed of their money today, research indicates that blacks continue to be treated far worse than whites when seeking loans or mortgages, even when all other variables such as credit history or academic and professional credentials are the same. Quote, if you are white and set out to get financing for an entrepreneurial venture, it might be a tough journey, said Glenn Christensen, professor of marketing at Brigham Young University. He goes on, but generally speaking, you would experience fewer obstacles and find more help along the way than if you came from African-American or Hispanic background. And then we'll wrap it up here. In recognition of these age-old disparities in access to a growing number of community leaders are supporting Black-owned banking institutions, quote, empowerment starts with ownership, unquote, explained a renowned renowned singer-songwriter Usher during a Black History Month appearance at the Black-owned Citizens Trust Bank in Atlanta. He continues, we're here supporting Citizens Trust Bank as a Black bank, but it also stands for the support of all the Black businesses that they support. It's all about supporting our own. And I think we'll just leave it right there. So, yeah, you're absolutely right, Q. There's a lot of stories. This is, mind you, this isn't, you know, Rosewood. This isn't, you know, I forget the name of the town in Florida. This isn't, you know, Tulsa, where there was Black Wall Street. You know, this isn't, I think there was another establishment that did really well politically and economically. And I want to say it was either North or South Carolina, but the Carolinas. So this is a story that's happened many times in history, and oftentimes Black people lose out and white men would benefit from it. And so it's important to understand your history, y'all, just so we know where we stand and where we're going and how to best be there for each other. We don't hate anyone. We just need to tell the truth, right? And that's what we do each and every week here on Civic Cypher. So once again, I am your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. I am Q Ward. Love. That's my message. Love. We are the greatest example of love that the world has ever seen.
Mm-hmm. And we appreciate you listening to us each and every week. If you want to support us, hit the website, civiccypher.com. Submit any questions, any topics, anything you want us to cover. Make a donation and follow us on all social media at Civic Cypher. And I want to make a correction. Last week, we said that there were 80 million slaves that drowned in the Middle Passage. That number was misquoted. It's somewhere between 1 and 4 million. So, once again, thanks for listening to Civic Cypher, and we'll talk to you all soon. Hey, yo, we handle it. These brothers are fabulous. Yeah. Dilated, showing you where rhyme travel is. Worlds is spittoon, from sunlight to moon. Busting off stage like gunfights the moon. Pull my mic back, you like that? Journalists, we're journalists too. We can strike back. Hardcore reporters with orders from headquarters. Behind enemy lines, sidestepping the borders. With press passes, we bring it to you as it happens. The streets love my crew for music and rapping. Street commander slash beat expander, here to fight the slander with the proper propaganda. What's happening? You got a question, then ask it. The news is just a TV show, get past it. And this from a quiet wartime journalist. Headlines, wake up, refuse and resist. Like this. You're tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 33rd Annual Cascade Festival of African Films throughout the month of February, with a collection of films by African directors from over 16 nations.